everybody. Welcome to Babs Buzz. I am so excited to be here. I've got a lot to talk to you about, so I hope you're listening. Turn up your volume. Okay, here we go. We're going to get right into it. This show mostly is going to be about three specific topics. Simply Scripts Radio as a website, some editing tips, some success stories. Now, I should tell you a little bit of history about if you don't know how I came to Simply Scripts Radio. I did an interview for them. They were nice enough to have me as a guest. I had a ball. I hope to someday be on a panel with some of the people who actually do these things. It would be a lot of fun to ask some questions of people in the industry, since I do that all the time. So I would like to kind of get an idea of what people are thinking that I pitch, and that would be kind of fun. But Simply Scripts Radio, it really is very educational. I hope you guys do listen to the shows. You can't believe some of the nuggets that you glean from Simply Scripts Radio. Just the fact that they're out there for us guys, this is so huge. One of the things about Simply Scripts that's exciting is the fact that no matter what's going on in the industry, they kind of have a way of bringing it back to what matters, and that's scripts. And under that umbrella of scripts, of course, is story. I want to tell you some of the things that you need to know about how you go about writing a script, how you get started, and I'm also going to speak to how you edit a script once you get it rocking. Simply Scripts Radio has all these wonderful little places you can go to check on a variety of things. Please don't hesitate to look at some of the people that they advertise here. They really are helpful to us as agents, of course, because it shows us places we can recommend to writers, and the very latest technology as well. How do you edit a script? This is one of my strengths. The challenge of editing a script comes down to, I have to digress to set this up right. If you guys remember, I had a challenge done about Werewolves of London. If you remember, people were saying to me, oh, expository, you got to do it, you got to do it, you got to do it. No, I don't think so. I am telling you that there are ways that you can wordsmith yourself through a scene and make it so lean, so crisp, so visual, but it takes practicing. And yes, hello, it takes guts with what? It's called the editing pen. That's what you have to use. You have to edit through things to make them vivid, to make them rich, to make them script. Remember what I hearken back to, which is the basics. Obviously, a table read, you catch this stuff. But remember, readers read all day. Do you really want to exhaust them with three paragraphs of setup when you're talking about a laboratory, or three paragraphs of setup when you're describing a stable on a farm? Of course not. You say stable, day. I mean, come on, most people can envision it. If there's something absolutely particular about it that's critical, like that it's 1795 or some such thing, then of course you're going to elaborate more. But what I am telling you is it's really important that when you sit down and write this stuff, less is more. Well, what does that speak to? Everything begins and ends with story. When you start writing a script, you shouldn't – I recommend to my students this. They have their story in their heads. They flush their story out from page 1 to page 10, or page 1 to page 5, or page 1 to page 50. You'll hear Cameron speak about the fact that he writes the movie in his head really as a story, but it really looks like a treatment. That's okay, too. What I'm telling you is don't worry about slug lines. Don't worry about action lines. Don't worry about all that stuff. Why am I telling you all this? Because all of us are banging our heads together trying to figure this out, and it comes down to this. You got to know your story. If you don't know your story, your characters are going to be bumping into each other in the dark. How do you avoid that? Well, if you write your story out in longhand, meaning you type it up, and don't edit it. I don't care if there's typos. I tell my students this. It's really important you get this. You have my permission to put ugly on the page. You can always fix it later. I remember reading I hope you guys subscribe to Creative Screenwriting. It's a killer magazine, and I highly recommend you subscribe to the hard copy. And the reason why I say it is simple. You can take it anywhere you go. I know you have your iPhones and everything, but it's something about holding it, something about seeing the words on the page with the photos, and it's very tactile for me. I love it. And I was reading about Black Swan, and I was reading the notes, comments between the director and the writer, and how they went back and forth and back and forth with notes and changes and notes and changes and this and that, and vanilla ice cream and chocolate ice cream and which one and strawberry shortcake and all this stuff. And this took 2 years. So don't rush yourselves when you're trying to excite yourself into entertaining yourself when you write your story. remember, you really, it's got to turn you on, man. It's got to get you excited. It's got to be that thing that makes you sit down and give up time playing golf and give up time having coffee at the coffee shop and give up time making cookies with your kids that one day to do a little something for yourself and write. And I know it's hard. That's what makes it so wonderful. The agony of it is really, nowadays it's not really as hard as it used to be. I mean, we've got computers and dictionaries online, and I mean, you type a sentence and you can find anything about anything for backstories and information and lush details. This should excite the writer nowadays. But again, if you don't know your story, if you don't know what you're talking about, you're going to have challenges. Which brings me to my class today. I had a very small group. It was really nice. I'm thinking about actually making this a habit and doing 5 students a month. It was really exciting. We were talking about, the first thing we did was we did the character sketch, which is it's a 6 or 7 or 10 page thing that I put together with a bunch of friends. And then a friend of mine found a better one and she sent it to me. And it's very cool. It shows you how to break down your script from start to finish. If you can find character sketches out there, take a look and see if you can find one. I will do my best to try and send Michael the link. And if they let us send it out by permission, then perhaps we'll do that. But the essence of it is this. It's a dossier. What happens in Act 1? What happens in Act 2? What happens in Act 3? B story Act 1, B story Act 2, B story Act 3. Who's eating what? Who smells like what? Who's walking over here? Who's when the actor is speaking, the subtext is rich because you've set them up so clearly in the beginning. If you don't know your story, you can't really have your person speaking in subtext because you don't really know what that is. I'll give you an example. There's a great scene in Batman where I may have mentioned this before because so many people have seen it, where Jack Nicholson is standing there and his bodyguard's behind him, and Jack Nicholson's character, the Joker, he's not the Joker yet, he's just talking to a dirty cop, and the dirty cop pulls a gun, and his bouncer behind him, behind Jack Nicholson, puts the gun over his shoulder, and Jack Nicholson doesn't even take his hands out of his pockets, and he says, "Better be sure." Now, what makes that so interesting is it's simple elegance, but rapid-fire communication. What do I mean? Well, Jack Nicholson as a character, well, as Jack, it's Jack. I mean, come on, this is Jack. But if you put another actor in that scene, if he took the direction the way Burton wanted it, the character's hands are in his pockets. He not only doesn't blink, he not only doesn't flinch, he never removes his hands from his pockets. He never takes his eyes off the person he's talking to because he doesn't have to. Why? He's got a bodyguard. So this simple little visual creates a lot of subtext. It says to me, boy, you don't worry about anything, do you, Jack? Which is the line earlier narrated by that gorgeous model. I can't remember her name. So what I am telling you is if you know your characters well, their voices will start to come to you. Don't fight that. Don't give, you know, don't give the Joker 18 lines when he can say it in 4 words. That's what I mean by editing. I remember a screenwriting teacher, I can't remember who it was, it might have been Michael Haig, I heard this from a seminar somewhere, he said, never let 4 lines of dialogue go on to 5 if you can help it. Now, occasionally that happens in things like A Few Good Men with, you know, Son, We Sit on That Wall, and You Want Us on That Wall, You Need Us on That Wall, and da-da-da, again, it's Jack. But I don't say that because it's Jack, I say that because it's sort of written like a monologue at that point. It's really quite lovely, and it's critical. Because you really get to know the motive of that character. So sometimes monologues, they used to call them soliloquies, they kind of are necessary. What does that speak to? Again, it comes all the way back to story. What does that mean? Cinderella wants to go to the ball, okay? She can't get to the ball because she doesn't have any money. She doesn't have a dress. So what does she get? Oh, she gets fairy godmother. How fabulous is that? Don't you wish you had one? Write that script for you, I bet. Okay, so if we get Cinderella up a tree, meaning the clock strikes 12, ding, 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 she's got to go. We know our story inside and out with Cinderella. You've got to know your story inside and out before you even begin to type the words fade in. Because once you know your story, that's when Save the Cat, the book, becomes so helpful. Because if you can visualize your story in just a narrative, you know, 3, 4, 5 pages of what you want to say, who the protagonist is, who's stopping him, what are his main challenges, what is going to be the real crisis midpoint that makes this character put up or shut up, and then your third act. All right, so if you know your story very, very well, then what's going to happen? Oh, I can tell you, it's almost like magic. The characters will start talking to you. Oh, they'll wake you up in the middle of the night, you'll be in the shower, you'll be driving. It's obnoxious, but it's great. It's a joy. Well, what happens there? This is where you start to jot down, and I'm a big believer in this. Debbie Scott taught me this because of Save the Cat. You do your cards. You know, he says in the back, you've got to do your cards. You've got to set it up. You know you need a scene, interior, stable, night, when the horse is sick, okay? You know you have a sick horse scene. That's what you know. So you put that on your board. It doesn't have to be the first scene. Doesn't have to be the last scene. You just stick the scene on your board. You know that you need a scene where you're finding your horse. Your horse may have run away. And you know there's a scene where you're talking to someone about the fact that they may have seen your horse. You put that scene on the board. Guess what starts to happen? You got 50, 60, 70 cards. All of a sudden you're like, oh, I think I got a movie here. And you start taking cards down one at a time. And now you start to write your screenplay. And that's what makes it fun. You don't throw the cards away. Don't throw them out because you might need them, right? I mean, use your head. Don't never throw anything out. Always save it. I always save lines of dialogue for writers. I give them to them because they for some reason they seem to like them. So, and I'm a pretty good editor, so I don't mind giving that stuff away because I'm not a screenwriter, but I'm a really good editor, and I can very often succinctly have a character say something that the writer may have had 3 or 4 or 5 lines where he says or she says a series of things, and I can almost always get it down to a sentence that's really visual and really crisp. I don't know why I can do that, but that's what editing is. Now, I'm going to give you the flip side of that coin. I had a student today. His name is David, and he's a really smart guy. I mean, this guy knows history inside and out. He's just a very bright guy. He came into my class today. It's nice to meet him, and he said, you know, I've got this idea for a story, and he told me, and it just – I was completely riveted by this story idea. And he got so bogged down in the history of it that he had forgotten what was important. And that is this. Are you listening? Say yes. That's this. The people are the ones who make the history. So rather than have this big aerial shot coming in over your story, I said to him, try to tell the story from the waist up. Try and tell the story eye to eye. It's very much like when you watch what Spielberg did at E.T., where he shot a lot of it from the ground. Well, that was smart because E.T. is the star and he's trying to orient you to what he's doing. And there were many scenes, if you remember, where you'd see the adult chain, the adult keychain jangling on the guy's belt loops. That's huge because it shows you perspective. I told David, if you write this script, I give you permission. Because I do this with my students. I mess with them. I give them several permissions. One of them is I give them permission to put ugly on the page because you can always fix ugly. I mean, I put lipstick on every morning for a reason. You know, I don't go out naked faced. Okay. So I told him, write it to 150 pages. Jason told me this is a really good idea too. Write your 140, 150 pages and then cut it back. You'll know what has to stay. And then you'll have meat on the bones. And then you start going through it and fixing and editing and tweaking and changing 3 sentences to 1 line or changing like Lynn does very well. She'll take a paragraph and she'll put 1 word, purgatory. I mean, you know, it just really, really rivets the reader and keeps the page with a lot of white, but a lot of info. And remember, narrative tug trumps white on the page. So if narrative tug trumps white on the page, then yeah, you can get away with a little black, can't you? Michael's going to be a good man today, and he's going to give me cues so that I don't run out of time. Gee, I hope I get everything in that I want to say. Michael's wonderful when it comes to flashing up the little pencil saying 20 minutes, 15 minutes, that kind of thing. So hopefully I'll get that from Michael today, because I could really go on about this stuff. I'm really passionate about how you edit your picture. Now, back to Simply Scripts. I'm going to be kind of all over the place with regard to Simply Scripts. Simply Scripts has done more for me in 1 year than, oh my gosh, I can't even begin to tell you. First of all, you all know I signed Ryan Lee for his script Beyond the Mountain. That script is really amazing. It needs a little fleshing out here and there, but it's market ready. It's really well crafted. That was the first time I actually signed a writer from Simply Scripts. I also was lucky enough to stumble on Open Your Mind, which the one sheet attracted me, and then I read the script and I couldn't put it down. I signed Martin Lancaster. If you go to martinlancaster.com, you can see a little bit about him. That was really amazing. That was an amazing experience. I just signed him on Monday. We already have his material in front of a producer. I'm giving a particular producer first look, and then I'm going to give him a few days, actually, and then probably very early next week, I'm going to urge Martin Lancaster to put his script on Inktip, as I always do. And then Greg Baldwin, I'm hoping I can sign him any day now. I've got to see a finished script. I got to make sure that it's got all the things firing. The reason why I signed Baldwin, by the way, is because of you guys on the thread, and I'll tell you why. You guys are amazing. You know so much about this craft. It blew my mind. I read the notes that you guys put out there for the Scorsese Club. First of all, title's hysterical. I mean, come on. Give me a break. You got to love it. You got to find out what this is about as soon as you hear the title. So I see the title. I see the one sheet. It's cute. And I start reading it, and I get very interested. Something distracted me from finishing it. I can't recall what it was. I think it was the opening of the second act or something in the middle of the second act wasn't firing exactly right, but it was really working. It was really working. I thought, you know what? Let me just see what the thread has to say about this. Oh, wow. You guys, absolutely amazing notes. You did this man an amazing service by helping him out the way you did. I was able to look at some of the things that you guys put out there about various things that were happening in the script, and I thought, boy, these guys really know craft. So you guys get total props from me regarding the Scorsese Club. I'll tell you straight up, the Scorsese Club, boy, if that one goes, it's going to be wonderful. It needs a little buff here and a buff there, but nothing that Greg can't handle, I'm sure. So I got three writers I'm working on from Simply Scripts, and I will tell you, I only found one writer I can sign from Inktip, but I'm still hopeful. I signed Craig Clyde from Inktip. I'm still out there looking at Inktip because Inktip has got some promising talent blossoming out there. Did get an option for Laser Bladers. Very excited about that. I'm going to talk about some of my successes this week. So that was really cool for Robert to get it. And we got a wonderful quote from a terrific manager who said she found the script very memorable and very different. She liked it very much. She said it was unique. I agree with her. To me, it's a wonderful modern-day Tron for a tweener audience. Doesn't have the darkness of a Harry Potter, but does have a little bit of, you know, a little bit of charcoal in there. It's really a great script. I love it. I love the characters. I especially love Lily, the blind chick. Her character arc is quite lovely, what happens to her. Some more successes I've had are several options, a couple of pictures that really are about to fund. That's very exciting. There's one in particular that's been really a challenge. I may have mentioned to you in the past, we've had this option going for a little over 2 years. We've started our third year. Money is close to coming in on that. Things are loosening up. It's kind of interesting to see just how well things are loosening up. But again, on the vergitis, it's hurry up and wait, hurry up and wait, hurry up and wait. That's the nature of this business, which brings me back to, believe it or not, editing. Everybody's in such a hurry to get me their script. Don't be. Write a great script. Give me a great story with a very different hook. I was talking to a writer. I read a book. I actually read a real live book last week. Yay, a book, cover to cover. It was a small book, but it was very lovely. It was called The Horse at the Corner Post. And the book had some challenges from a literary point of view, but you know what? I didn't even care because the story was so interesting. The woman was so passionate about, you've heard me talking about horses, this is why. She was so passionate about conveying how hard she tried to find a horse from her childhood that she loved so dearly. It's very much like trying to find an old friend. And the story was so interesting and so compelling. She's one of the few people that I said to, you know, this might be a better idea if you just let a professional write this story. Not that she couldn't do it. Of course she could do it. And I told her she absolutely should try. And Denise, if you're listening, you should. But stories like this are so good. You get so excited so quickly that you almost wish that, you know, that someone could just jump in and take over, because you see it so quickly. It has such a promising commercial edge to it that I get the same excitement you guys do when you go, oh, I've got a great story. I got to get it out there. Got to get it out there before somebody else does. Well, it's that, yeah, on the Virgitis, hurry up and wait. But it's also, you know, you're like, oh, I would like to see it. You know, I'd like to see the finished script. Keep in mind, I go to some movies, but I read more scripts than I go to movies. My viewing of films has suffered dramatically in the last 4 years because of my job as an agent. That's what you call ironic, right? Something very, very weird, don't you think? So if you're editing your picture, you've got your scenes laid out and you're editing and you're cutting back and you're adding and you're cutting and you're adding and you're cutting and you're adding. One of the things that Save the Cat will allow you to do is have a very informal formality. Well, what does that mean? You can throw these cards all over the place, but you know that you're kind of sticking to a structure. And I got into kind of a little bit of a debate with a very popular producer who shall remain nameless because I like him and he likes me, so I don't want to piss him off, but I got into this little debate about formula with the guy, and the guy goes, listen, Barbara, you got to be careful. And I said, you know, you're right. You do. But not at my stage and not at what I want, because I have my eyes and my ears are very specific. I know exactly what I like and what I don't like. But more to the point, and I think this is where you guys really get it, I like voice. I'm going to repeat that. I like voice. Voice comes through on the page for me. It really, really does. I feel like if I could share with you some of the scripts that I've had and seen, that you guys would get so excited, you'd say, oh man, Barbara, I can hear and see exactly what you're talking about. So don't forget, there's an informal formality to all this, which speaks to the main thrust of this particular show in terms of technique. Which is and I do want to say, I want to give some shout outs while I'm on the subject. A couple of students today really get some props. Jeff for his sci-fi picture, he got great coverage. That was exciting. Now he's starting his rewrites. I said, okay, you got a great story, you got good coverage. Now what do you got to do? I didn't even answer the question. He said to me, now I got to make it market ready. Bingo, huge. What does that mean? Lean, mean, fighting machine. Then Diane, who started out with a story that was kind of going in 14 different directions. And after we did this little workshopping thing where we all kind of banged heads and talked about it, it was really fun. She kind of came away with, you know, yeah, I think I can see the stories a little differently. And what makes that important is it's going to free her up to write it. It doesn't have to be perfect. No one's asking her to get it right the first time. Nobody cares if you get it right the 15th time. You just have to get it to where you really, really know it's ready for a table read. And also for coverage, because once you get that coverage back, you're going to get more notes. I mean, that for sure is going to happen. So let's talk about 101 Things I Learned in Film School, Neil Landau and Matthew Frederick. Wow. Okay. Here it is, kids. This is where the rubber hits the road. Second act, page 31. Act 2 is where a poorly structured film goes to die. Okay. Trick question. If you are writing a story and you know your story well, I mean really well, and you know where your protagonist is headed and you know who the antagonist is or what the antagonist is. Sometimes the antagonist is just war. But how do you anthropomorphize that? Well, you consolidate the war effort into a bad guy or a villain, right? You bring it right down to the ground, eye level. I'm going to repeat this, page 31. Act 2 is where a poorly structured film goes to die. Now, I'm presuming that this is a finished product, but let's talk about this when you're writing. Every script I read, Act 2 is where the script either jettisons or takes a crap. And one of the things I notice about that is it doesn't have to. Why does it? I'm going to go all the way back to the beginning of this conversation today, kids. Because the person didn't know their story. They didn't know what they were talking about. They didn't know what they wanted to accomplish. They didn't know what they wanted to establish. They didn't know what stakes they wanted. They didn't know how high they wanted the stakes to go. They didn't get their hero up a tree high enough. They didn't throw enough rocks at him. So that by the time he's working things out or she's working things out, you're in Act 3 and you're like, what happened to Act 2? It isn't even there. If you make things simple for the person in the film, there's no movie. It's just a great story over cocktails. And frankly, I'd rather sit and have an appletini. So if you're gonna do this, when you do your table read, right around page 22, 25 to like 60-ish, you better be paying attention. Because if you are not, if your characters are speaking and not, number one, getting out a lot of information to the reader, of course, you have to impart information. Number two, heightening the tension. There's going to be challenges. Act two is one of those places where so many scripts go to die. And I'll tell you, in the end, they really don't have to. I've seen that with a couple of scripts that I've actually I could not help these writers because I knew what they wanted to do. I knew how they could do it. But I couldn't sit down and explain to them in specific words what specific pieces needed to move to get them there. Why? Well, they didn't establish their character early on now, did they? Had they done that, that might have been a lot easier for me. I heard from a director, Oben, he's a really nice guy. He says to me, you know, I just didn't root for this guy. I'm speaking about a script that I sent to him. He's a director in North Carolina. This guy's making his bones. He's quite good. And hopefully I'll do a deal with him. But one of the things he did was he said, you know, Barbara, I just wasn't rooting for the main guy. I wasn't rooting for the guy. And I almost said to him, I think I even said to him, yeah, I got it, but you're not supposed to be rooting for the guy. You're supposed to be rooting for the kid. Because the kid really is driving the story. Now, you can root for the guy because you feel for the guy. But really, the kid was driving the story. What that told me was, and this is important you get this, boys and girls, sometimes people just don't relate to the material. They just don't get it. There are plenty of people who will not like Black Swan. I haven't seen it, but I read the script. It's great. A lot of folks who may not care for it. You know, it really does in many ways comes down to taste. Now, you got to remember, too, that one of the things about all this is, and this is the main thing that I wanted to stress, is it really comes down to luck. All of the things we do, everything we touch, my business is, Lady Luck is such a slut, I can't even tell you. When she's walking my street, I know about it because she's not around very much and she's usually in hot pink 7-inch stilettos. So I can't miss her when she's around. Why? Because things start happening when she's around. It's amazing what I went through in the last 3 weeks with one of my writers who's also a director. The ups, the downs, the highs, the lows. I finally said to Ed, I sat him down, I said, you know what? I'm glad I do this for the love of the craft. Because if I had to do this for the sale, I'd go out of my mind. This business is insane. It's completely, it's the complete opposite of the normal business model of everyday business. You have a business model, you have a product, you go out, you pitch it, you sell it, boom, you make a profit. Movies are not like that. They're not. And if you think they are, okay then. Well, you better keep listening to my show then because they really aren't. I had this wonderful conversation with Ed and I said, you know, here's the deal. I'm not excited about this picture. I hope it happens. It would be nice if it did for everyone because a high tide raises all boats. I mean, think about all the people that get put to work when a movie's happening. I mean, how exciting is that? Especially in an economy like this, you know, the maids, the gaffers, the electricians, caterers, everybody gets to work. It's really a joy. I mean, I do happy feet just thinking about that. And I haven't even seen my commission check yet. But I told Ed straight up, I said, you know, Ed, this is hard. I actually started to cry. I mean, real tears, like weeping for something that happened. And I told Ed that I can't do that. You know, I can't. And he said, kid, you got to protect yourself. And if shedding a tear is how you protect yourself, then that's how you do it. I really feel for my clients. I have 7 or 8 that are top drawer. I mean, all my clients have something very special, something very enticing to bring to show business. They just do. I wouldn't sign them if they didn't. It really is an act of business that they are my clients. But honestly, in the absence of luck, nothing really shakes out. Now, I will flip that coin for you and tell you something Martin Lancaster said to me, and he's right. You got to make your own luck. Well, yeah, that's true. How do you do that? You got to have your script ready when somebody knocks on your door. It's got to be market ready, which is even more important. It's got to entice actors. Actors and actresses don't want to look like idiots unless they're being paid to do it, you know, like Dumb and Dumber. They want to do rolls that they can sink their teeth into, like a big quarter pound freaking burger with onions and ketchup and everything. They're no different than you or me. They want to get excited about something they're doing. You've seen it. You've seen when actors and actresses walk through roles and they're just not excited about it. You can tell. I'll give you a good example. I can't remember the critic. I'm sorry. I apologize, but it was about Lincoln Lawyer. Read the book. Fabulous. Loved it. Great book. Great book. Great book. Did I say it was a great book? Oh, I should tell you. It's a great book. Okay. Lincoln Lawyer. The chick who was writing the review about McConaughey said the guy finally showed up. He's not there for just a paycheck, not there for just his abs. Now, I have to tell you, I disagree with that because I liked him very much in that picture where he was the 10 Ways to Lose a Guy or whatever that was called. I liked that picture very much. It was very smartly written. But she said he showed up. Now, that tells me a lot about what people notice about actors and actresses' performances. I don't know if you guys know who Michael Medved is. Michael Medved's one of my heroes. He's an amazing historian. He has a talk show on the radio Monday through Friday. But he started out, one of his jobs was reviewing films, and he still does that. He's still considered part of that milieu. Well, anyway, Michael Medved critiques pictures, and he's almost never wrong. And one of the things that Michael Medved will bring to the forefront is he'll tell you straight up if he sees an actor, an actress that, you know, really just isn't in the zone. And it's not because of anything maybe the actor or actress did. Maybe the direction wasn't gelling. Can't just point the finger at the actor and blame the actor, because the actor is really the result of the take, isn't he? Or she. They are the result of what the cutting room person says. Okay, that stays in, that goes out. So remember, when you're doing your stuff on the page, one of the most critical things you want to remember is that you are not really writing a finished movie. Yeah, you're writing a finished movie in that it's got a beginning, a middle, and an end, and it's telling a story. But remember, if as you'll read and learn, which I urge you to get Creative Screenwriting as a magazine, please get it. You'll learn so much from that magazine, because these people are talking to you about in the trenches, blood, sweat, tears, and vodka. They're telling you straight up, oh my gosh, we had months and months of notes, and this one came back and told me that. All of the things they said was right. I'm so glad I listened to him or her. I got very excited about this. I'll tell you, that magazine will really, it's like a college education right in your living room. Let's go back to 101 things I learned in film school. I'm running out of time, I think. Page 59, have some showstoppers. Now, not everybody is going to be able to dance on a piano, tap dance on a piano like Tom Hanks did in Big, okay? But use your head. Do you remember seeing something that really made you stop, look, and listen? Page 64, dig deeper. Now, this is important. Good movies are often, or even usually, about simple things explored with depth, nuance, and attention to detail and meaning. Resist the urge to needlessly clutter a film with more and more plot events, hidden agendas, shoot-'em-ups, illicit acts, and quirky characters that don't contribute to the central narrative. What's that? Central narrative equals through line, spine of the film. Instead, dig deeper into the murky gray areas of the events, i.e. subtext. I added that, by the way. Themes, emotions already present in the story do fewer things, but do them better. So, so great. Great advice for anybody, both the seasoned professional and the newbie. Call action in the mood. There's a page 48 says, call action in the mood of the scene. I think this really speaks to a director. It takes time and effort for actors to discover and inhabit the desired mood of a scene. If a scene is to be quietly intense, the director can help by whispering action in a soft but firm tone. If a frenetic brawl is to be filmed, he might call it out like an umpire. You know, this is some of the things that directors do to show you how they implement and get an actual take out of your particular scene. Page 11 is really important, and I'm going through this right now with another script. I have a killer script that's being developed right now. I can't wait till it gets out there. I'm giving one particular producer first look. I love the story. It's really cool. It's really weird. It's like a drama that's got a supernatural element in the end. I love it, love it, love it. It's so weird. The challenge with this particular story is we really have to control the backstory. And I don't mean me, I mean the writer. I'm giving him editorial tips, but he's you have to control the backstory. Childhood traumas, that kind of thing. That's on page 11 in the book. There's something in here, I don't remember what page it's on, and I'm kind of sorry that I didn't dog ear the page, but I'll tell you what it says. It says, tell the story in the cut. So if you can find that particular thing in the book, it's really cute if you can find it. It just says, it shows you how two characters or three characters may be talking about one thing, and somebody else, one guy says to another guy, I'm not getting on a plane with that jerk. And all of a sudden you see the three of them sitting inside an aircraft, you know, on a plane. So you tell the story in the cut. Very, very cool. I'm going to have to wrap this up pretty soon. I want you guys to take a couple of things, and take them to the bank. You are an amazing bunch of writers out there. I'm beyond impressed with Simply Scripts. I am actually amazed at the site, the level of writing, the wittiness, the skill at coverage notes that you guys yourselves have given each other. I am beyond amazed as to the courtesy and the kindness. Oh, wow. The kindness you've given to each other and just the wonderful reciprocity of it. It's just been... you guys have no idea how many times I will go on the thread and just pick something to look at and get completely reinvigorated by something you've either said or done on the thread. I have had a very rough month. It's been very intense and very good at the same time. Extremely educational, a lot of highs, a lot of lows. Not as bad for me, even though I wept like a baby, but, you know, I feel for my clients. I mean, you know, what are they doing? Well, I'll tell you. They're living their lives, right? They're taking care of the kids. They're taking care of the dogs, unlike me. They're taking care of their grandkids. They're taking care of their illnesses. They're taking care of the orphans in the neighborhood by feeding people in food kitchens. They're donating their time. They're tying their kids' shoelaces. They're cleaning the house. They're living. They're trying to avoid suffering from on the vergitis. Not easy. Very, very difficult. I tell you straight up, when I talk to you guys every month, which I'm beyond proud to do and happy to do, sometimes I'll play the show back just to get myself jazzed because I know how difficult it is. You got to focus. You have to think clearly. You have to put all of your ducks in a row. You can't sacrifice your whole life just for writing. However, if you're going to make sacrifices and do your writing, make sure that you're at least enjoying it, that you're getting something out of it, that it's feeding your soul. Don't just do it because you think it might be a great movie someday. Because let me tell you, people are looking all the time for things to do. And you can invite a bunch of friends over and have a table read, and they'll think they're just having some fun and having a, you know, a cocktail. You stay sober because you have an agenda, right? And you're listening to them read your story, and that's a real thrill. That's something very exciting. You can't put a price on that. There's something really very, very interesting about that credit card commercial where they say, you know, two tickets to a ball game, X, da, 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 X, da, 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 X, spending time with your grandson, priceless. It's huge. It's true. It's relevant. It's tangible. Why? It makes memories. But more importantly, you might be able to use it in a script. Everybody, thank you so much for tuning in today. I will see you next month. Don't forget that Michael was very kind to put Babs Buzz on Facebook. Your comments are always welcome. I will help you as often as I can, whenever I can. Remember, I'm looking for the next, next great heist picture. I will always be looking for a great heist picture because I got a couple of buyers out there who are always in the market for that kind of thing. This is Babs for Babs Buzz, reminding you to write, rewrite, 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 and live your life. Peace.